No. Okay. Quick bit of administration. If you weren't in the morning session and haven't signed the white sheet, could you sign it before you leave? Leave it on the front table. Okay. We have seven presentations. We're doing them mostly in alphabetical order, apart from Nick CZ, who are going to go after Amzix, so they've got time to finish. Otherwise, they're going to be on second. And So, first up is Keith from Exchange Point, and then it'll be Curtis.
Okay, good afternoon. I'm Keith Mitchell from Exchange Point. I'm going to give you the regular update. We've had a very busy 3 months since the last Wright meeting. We're now fully up and running in Frankfurt. I'm pleased to say we also have some customers in Frankfurt. One of the things that's helped bootstrap us in Frankfurt is we've acquired a smaller exchange that was operating there at FIX. We upgraded our London network to 10 gig, slightly ahead of when we'd anticipated doing it, so that's been interesting. The reason for doing that early is unprecedented traffic growth. We've seen some traffic growth in our network, which really I have not seen before in over a dozen years of working in this industry. It wasn't all straightforward. We've had some issues with switch hardware from one vendor in particular, but we are over 150 customers across our three cities now. And the Amsterdam deployment is going to happen over the next 5 to 6 weeks. What locations are we in? In London, we continue to be in seven sites. In Frankfurt, we're now in three co-location sites in a total of five buildings across these. We have presence in Hamburg and Telehouse, and in Amsterdam, initially, we'll be going to Nykhef and Telecity 2. Just to emphasize, our business model is not about connecting cities together. It's about running metro networks. We do real Ethernet in metro areas, not pseudo Ethernet between them. In terms of our Frankfurt deployment, that's been up and running since early March. As I said, we have seven customers. We have three German-based employees now. One of them, Christoph Grosso, should be here later this week if you want to talk to him. In terms of the actual implementation of the network, we went for Foundry in Frankfurt. So the IX Route and Redbus sites have each got two Foundry Big Iron 8000s at them, and then at Interaction, we have basically one Big Iron 8000 per site. And basically, the Interaction One facility was the former FIX exchange. That's all fully integrated now. We also decided to go for 802.1w, spanning tree for rapid convergence. That seems to be working well in Frankfurt with the Foundry equipment. And basically, we have dark fiber between all of these sites. We can provide not just peering and transit services, but also point-to-point VLANs if there's interest in that. And it will be very straightforward to upgrade the dark fiber and the switches to 10 gig capability as the traffic level rises. I suspect that it may not rise quite as quickly as it has in London. During January, February, March, we were seeing 10% per week traffic growth. I'm still not completely sure of the underlying causes of that. I have some ideas, and I'm sure some of it is due to increased spam, virus activity, but I'm sure there's definitely positive growth in there as well. Fortunately, we'd already made the commitment to go to 10 gig at the end of 2003. But we have been planning on a sort of April-May deployment for that. In practice, we need to bring that forward rather quickly. As a result, we postponed our Amsterdam deployment from March into May. The network never actually got congested, despite being a 1-gig core network and despite seeing, about 3 gig of traffic. Partly because we have the underlying DWDM network in London, and basically we were able to use some spare capacity in that to trunk up some of our internal links and avoid congestion while we got on with the 10 gig deployment. We're seeing about 4.5 gig of switch traffic over the Ethernet network now, and then there's about another 4 gig of traffic estimated over the DWDM private interconnect network. Whether the traffic flow is going to continue at 10% a week, I don't know. Certainly it's not been as acute in April, but we'll see how it goes. 10 gig upgrade. Well, there's always war stories whenever you upgrade an internet exchange. One of the particular challenges that we faced was the lack of space in the telehouse buildings in London meant that essentially we had to do an atomic operation in terms of cutting people over from the old Alpine switches to the new Black Diamond switches. That basically involved moving about 100 customer connections and doing it in a single six-hour maintenance slot. We knew that would be difficult. What we didn't know was that between October and April that we were going to see about 25%, a total of 9 cards and 3 chassis, including some of the new Triumph silicon-based stuff from Extreme, fail on us. I'd like to know what the underlying cause of this. All the equipment's about the same age, about 3 years. I know of other exchange operators who've had similar problems with Extreme equipment of the same age. The main components that seemed to be failing were either shared memory components or bus transceivers. One of the things that may have happened is that actually these hardware faults were manufacturing faults, some of which Extreme had known about and informed us about, but they kept improving the capability of the software to actually detect these hardware issues. So it may well be that these problems were lurking from day one and they didn't show up either because the old software didn't detect it or because the there was areas of memory that were not being exercised until we saw the sudden traffic growth. What I would say is if you're running Extreme software before Extreme 711 build 14, that you upgrade to that and you run extended diagnostics on all your hardware, because until you do that, you don't know what may be lurking there. What I would like from Extreme is some answers as to what the underlying cause of this is. We haven't had anything back from in terms of analysis of the failed components, and they really need to get their act together on that. The other challenge as far as the 10 gig stuff was concerned was we had a live network, we were running 802.1d, we wanted to bring it to 802.1w, which Extremeware 7.2 allows us to do, give us more rapid convergence on the spanning tree, also to address the fact that we weren't relying on the WDM to do that anymore. I think it's fair to say that most other 802.1w deployments and internet exchanges have been done on new hardware or new exchanges rather than a running one. So that was interesting. But I think the Extreme guys deserve commendation for getting that working on top of all the other stuff that we were doing. The only real linkle that we found was that the way that default VLANs are handled and the Extreme implementation of rapid spanning tree seems to be slightly different. In general, we moved the default VLAN, which is the tagged one for carrying BPDUs, away from VLAN 1 on our old network on the new one so that to avoid clash with customers' connected switches. On the new one, we've had to go back to that. But on the other hand, we're running 802.1w. The customers are now running 802.1d if they're running any spanning tree on equipment which is connected to us at all. So that in itself reduces the scope for accidents. So what does our London network look like now? Well, the interesting stuff is the purple triangle in there, which is the additional dark fiber that we put in for the 10 gig network. It was not cost effective to run 10 gig over DWDM. We just went for native dark fiber. The DWDM network is still there. It's still used to bring in our global switch site, and it's also used to provide private interconnect services to customers. And one of the nice things is putting the 10 gig upgrade, a lot of the DWDM capacity that was there for the core of the network is now potentially available for additional private interconnect services. In terms of the configuration, 2 black diamonds at each of the 10 gig sites. We upgraded them to the new Extreme MSM3s, and they've got 2 10 gig cards in each of them. One is using the new Zenpack optics, and the other one for the inter-site links is using long reach. In order to do this, we had to upgrade to Extreme 7.2 zero, build 25. And then the other sites are running 1 gig, and basically they'll be upgraded in due course, not least with some of the switches that we freed up from the Tallyhouse sites. That's it, basically. If you want to have more information, there's my contact details. We also have our business development manager, Dennis Duth, here this week, if you want to talk about, find out more about our services. I'm just got a couple of brief plugs in there. I'll be presenting at NANOG about the topic that was being discussed earlier about when is it appropriate to connect internet exchange sites over long haul or not so metro distances, and when isn't it? Also about our experiences with doing that with LANAP on a local basis. We also having one of our regular events. In addition to the evening Beers with Peers format in London, we'll also be having an all-day event. So if you'd like to know more about that, then please ask me and I'll arrange for an invite for you. Any questions? Steve.
I use the mic. You routinely connect customers as trunk ports, which is fairly unusual because most exchanges connect them as access ports. And you sparked me to think about it when you were saying about spanning tree and stuff. We had some weird stuff when we connected up to do with... We connected and someone else's port went into blocking a cross-exchange point or something, but I'm just wondering what general issues you see with operating a reasonably large and relatively complicated network and then connecting with the layer 2 networks and stuff together where you've got so many potential interactions. Yeah.
Well, if it was up to me, we would not connect. In an ideal world, we would not connect customer switch equipment. In an ideal world, everything would be connected via native routers, and there wouldn't be intermediate customer switches or intermediate third-party switches or intermediate Ethernet circuit providers. Unfortunately, I mean, again, I'll cover this in my NANO presentation in some detail. I'll have a look at the abstract and I'll hopefully get the thing written over the next 10 days. In general, I think the issue that you saw, well, it is interesting because we learned two or three things about this from the from doing the upgrade. But I think the thing that you saw is that there is an issue in the way that the default tagging of STP BPDU frames is carried in Cisco switches compared to the way it's done in Extreme switches. And if you don't get it right, then it's actually possible for a BPDU from one customer to get across the network and actually stuff up the connectivity. So in a situation where you have Cisco, Extreme Cisco, then it's possible, I mean, our AUP says don't send us BPDUs. And we'll be using some of the improved features in Extreme where the new versions that we've upgraded to in order to protect us more from that kind of thing, you know, not least because we'll be doing 802.1w compared to the customers. But the situation basically in which a BPDU from one customer can be carried across our network and can hit another customer's network and basically cause a loop there, which causes damage. We're policing that stuff. We've learned a few things. That tends to happen a lot less now. However, another thing that we saw was that some of our customers, quite commendably, who are connected to us, the switches turned on Cisco BPDU guard stuff. So during the maintenance, while the 802.1w was activating itself, that caused a very brief loop. That was detected by the customer switch. The customer switch said, ooh, there's a loop here. I'm going to shut this port down. But the customer either forgot or didn't understand that they turned the BPDU guard on, so they phoned us up and said, my port's down. And it's like, yes, you need to turn it back on again, which is basically, and all they needed to do was to turn it back on. So... in general, I think defensive features for protecting the exchange and indeed connecting customers against switch interconnect are a good thing, but you need to remember that you've turned them on and what happens if they actually protect your network by disabling the service. These issues happen. I mean, our AUP covers quite a lot of these circumstances. One of the things that I've been kicking around as an idea, which has been on the back burner while we've been doing all the upgrade work, is potentially to introduce a VLAN on our peering fabric, which is for public peering for people who connect routers only. Because in general what happens when you see these loops, broadcast storms, these kind of things tend to confine themselves to the VLAN on which they were introduced. You know, in the old days, a broadcast storm would take out an entire switch. The switches these days, the broadcast storm doesn't take out the entire switch. It takes out the entire VLAN that you see the broadcast storm on. In general, the switch and the rest of the network continue to function. One of the things that's kicking around is the idea of a VLAN, which has only got customer routers connected, and it's not possible for customers to connect switches or distance viewing circuits or stuff like that. Anyone who would be interested in that type of service and the increased level of resilience it would give? No. I wonder how many ISPs there are in the room. That again is one thought on that. But, you know, again, I'd like to see some more features from switch vendors which would help us protect against this stuff. Does that answer your question? Sorry, I went on for ages.
That answered several questions. that thing about routers only, that sounds of interest, actually, but I'm just curious as to how you're going to define it. Example, I have 6509s running native iOS. Is that a router or a switch? Do I get in or not? And there's loads of other boxes out there at the minute.
And there are customers out there who don't actually understand whether the box they've got is configured as a router or a switch, I'm afraid to say. I think that what you do in circumstances like that is you have a fairly strict set of criteria which says one MAC address only, no BPDU frames. And whereas at the moment, if we see stuff like that coming through, we phone up the customer first. I think for that type of VLAN, we would basically shoot first and ask questions later. So that if we saw more than one MAC address or BPDU frames on that particular interface, then it would get shut down, and then we would call the customer. Or we would put features in which, depending on the switch vendor support, which we shut that down, rather than taking a more flexible approach.
Any more questions? Okay, thank you, Keith.
Thank you.
Okay. Could I remind people, please, to say who they are when you're standing up and asking a question, because not everybody knows Stephen. That was Stephen Wilcox from Telecom. So, next up is Curtis.
It was here before. It was here before lunch. All right, so I'm still Curtis Lindquist, or Curtis at NetNode. I'll give you a short update on NetNode. NetNode is the largest peering point in Sweden. We are currently active in 5 cities in Sweden. We 4 of them are located in government-controlled mountain caves, which makes us a bit special. So that also means that we won't disclose where they are to you. In Stockholm, if you buy a connection to us, we will provide the fibers to you, and we won't tell you where the A end is. NetNode is owned by a foundation called the TU Foundation, so we're a non-for-profit, all for the best of the internet. We have a daughter company of NetNode that does research and development and also runs the iRootService.net and some other TLD service that runs secondaries of us, so we have a number of hosting customers that we operate this service for. Latest development, we have a 5th location active in Luleå. Luleå is as far up you can go in the Baltic Sea, where Sweden meets Finland. There's 2 providers being connected there. The exchange point there is the joint project between NetNode and the local city and the local, what I call it in English, the local region. They're building a fiber network covered. This part of Sweden is actually so sparsely populated that they actually don't exist according to the EU definition, because there's less than 0 people per square kilometers living there. And if you go up there, it's actually true. There is more reindeers than maybe Santa Claus. But okay. So they're building a fiber network to all the reindeers and to cover all the villages around there. And this fiber network will terminate in Luleå. And in order to attract ISPs to come there, and there's quite a few of them already there, they wanted to build an exchange point, and we're doing this in cooperation with them. There's also the thing is that Sweden, the distance there is a bit further than the Netherlands. So it's an hour flight from Stockholm to Luleå, just a bit over an hour. It's probably easier to come to Amsterdam, and that's including the holding time outside. So this is also in order to take down latency on this. There's quite a lot of fibers going along the coast, so it's not to keep cut down costs, but in order to keep down latency. I've been for the last coming meetings, I've been telling you that we're closing down the SRP that we used to be running. We only have SRP 2.5 gig running in Stockholm. We expect to close that within 1 or 2 months, and then we're gone with SRP completely. And all the exchange points will be GigE based. And we will become a boring traditional AXP like the rest of you. We are looking at 10 gig and upgrade to 10 gig platforms, as I think I said also in January. There is some demand for this. There are some people who are going for their second port connections, and maybe they're looking at doing a third connection to handle the load they're having. So we're looking at doing a 10 gig upgrade. Was planned to actually do it this summer. We went around and looked at all the vendors, and we couldn't really find anything we thought was worth the money. So we're doing some more investigation discussions with the vendors, and we're planning to maybe do an upgrade more towards the end of the year. We're also launching private VLAN services on popular request. So people who wants to, ISPs who wants to sell bandwidth to other ISPs, or who wants to do private interconnects using the existing infrastructure, we will offer that. There you get for trying to use use Windows. If you take a nice graph from Apple and you run it through Windows, you notice that they can't show it. Well, this is the traffic growth of NetNode for last year. I guess I could go pick up my own laptop. It's only two pictures. We're after doing, we're doing 20 gig of traffic across all the exchange points in all the four cities. If you heard me do this, I pointed out to you before that we had the SRP stuff that we're using could actually calculate bandwidth correctly. Basically, you were measuring traffic going out of the concentrators for SRP, but as this is a ring, you had a risk of calculating traffic twice because it might not be that the traffic actually drops at the point where you send this out. So we thought that as we migrated away from SRP, we thought that traffic, the figures would actually decrease. They're not decreasing, they're actually still increasing. That means that we're, first of all, it means two things, that the people who are sitting next to each other on the SRP ring probably were the ones who had most traffic to each other. The second thing is that the traffic is apparently growing faster than the miscalculation of the SRP ring. It's also growing faster than we are adding capacity. If you would see, the 20 gigabit I'm showing you, it looks like it's flattening out for the last few months, and that's this SRP migration you're seeing. But what's also interesting is at the same time, there's been actually quite a huge amount of private peering capacity between the big providers of Sweden added. And knowing this, we also thought we would see a drop in traffic, and we're still seeing an increase in traffic. So there seems to be quite a lot of traffic growth there. Of those 20 gigs, the second slide I was going to show, of the 20 gigs, roughly a bit over 10 gig is in Stockholm. So most of the traffic is less than in Stockholm. Connected networks looks like the following. The interesting, what we're seeing, that probably isn't all that interesting to you, but as we switch to gigabit Ethernet in more and more cities, we noticed that we're seeing small providers connecting in Gothenburg and Malmö. These sites are not interconnected. So if you connect to Gothenburg, you'll only see the people connecting to Gothenburg. But we're starting to see small providers going into the local cities, and we're also seeing a lot of pan-national providers connecting in all the five locations. And also in Luleå, we have two connections coming up. they're just waiting for them to complete the digging of the fibers. But, so that's the... I've got to say that the Luleå location is the one that's not in a mountain cave. It's actually located in the city hall. So if someone decides to take out city hall, we lose the exchange point. Well, you can't have everything, can you? It's also 2 kilometers away from an airbase. So, future plans. We've been saying for a while we're going to hold a customer meeting to introduce the new terms and conditions that we're introducing. We haven't done that yet because there have been some outstanding issues with the legal work around them. Again, we're trying to make the new terms and conditions as easy, as straightforward as they can be in order to get rid of some of the special cases we have been forced to implement in the past. We're also looking at prices and price structures. I keep getting the remark from new providers that we're the most expensive exchange point in Europe. Well, that's true, though, but for the Stockholm prices, that does include the city fiber. And yes, you're getting two connections to two different switches. We are looking at the price structure, if there's anything we can do there to work around this. Where one thing we're discussing is to simply break out the cost for the fibers and have people get their own fiber to our mountain case and simply disclose the location where they are. That's not a decision we can make there, but we're looking at doing something around prices and price structures. Also, NetNut have for the last 2 years budgeted for a loss, and we keep making a profit. So we can't even do that right. So we're probably looking at lowering the prices for next year because there is, again, we're non-for-profit. There is no self-interest for us to make a huge profit for this. We're also going to start, probably after the summer or maybe even during the summer, a round where we are trying to go to as much customers as possible and have a face-to-face meeting with them and try to get some feedback from them. If you're not a NetNode customer and still like to provide feedback, please contact me and we can maybe arrange that. Some updates on the iRoot server stuff that we're also doing. We're doing this anycasting of iRoot around the world. We've installed Stockholm, Helsinki, Oslo, Amsterdam, London, Milan, Geneva, Bangkok, Hong Kong in no particular order. That's the current nine, I guess that's nine sites that are live, unless I forgot someone. We're trying to do this with burstiness. So we send a poor guy, we ship out all this equipment, and then we give him a bunch of plane tickets saying, don't come back before it works. And so we're about to do another round of this. And next one's in line to have equipment either shipped by UPS today or already in transit is for Brussels, Frankfurt, Washington, Miami, San Francisco, Seoul, Ankara, Bucharest, and Singapore. And there's even some more sites we're discussing of installing, but we haven't decided on those ones yet. We're also looking at some form of contribution model. There's people who told us that they would really like to have, because what we did this, when we did this, we said that we created a budget for doing the Anycaster sites. As you might know, we have given this equipment away for free for a large number, for all these sites. We paid for the installation, paid for the operation, we paid for the equipment. We said that this is as much money we're willing to spend on this and nothing more than this, but there are still people who think, there's people who contacted us and said that they would like to contribute to this because they think that they are getting a gain out of this, so they think that they should be some, in one way or the other, contributing to the development of this or the deployment of these root servers. and who are we to refuse money? So we are looking at how you could handle this and what we could do, but we're a bit at the same time we're a bit sensitive of accepting money for a root server, but we're looking into some sort of contribution model for this. And that was all. Any questions? I spoke so fast again, so no one really followed me anyway. So, okay. All right. Thank you.
Hello. Yeah, thank you, Curtis. Next is Remco from Endix.
I wasn't going to do a presentation, but this morning at the coffee break, Fergus was nearly begging at me to do one.
No, I just said you were on the list and you hadn't said no, you weren't doing one.
Oh, is that how you put it now? Oh, okay. Just to prevent any mistakes, I'll just zip this up. I'm not representing AMSIX. That's an old shirt anyway, you're right. All right. The Nederlands-Duitse Internet Exchange, Nederlandisch-Deutsche Internet Exchange, Dutch-German Internet Exchange, whatever name you want to give it. I'll keep it really short. Here we go. Second slide, on the other slide. The Internet Exchange is now officially 50% German. Well, I'm still Dutch, but I'll give it a try anyway. We've got the Munster site now operational. I've been pestering you about this for the last, I believe, 2 years. It's finally happened. It's now linked to the platform in Enschede, and it's currently only a relatively small link, but fiber is on its way. And as we were talking about operational stability this morning, I took the trouble to log in to one of the switches to get the uptime. Oh, there it is. There's a whole lot of other things I'd like to talk about, but they're not actually related to internet exchanges, so let's just keep it at this. Okay, thanks. Any questions?
Could you give your name and please use the microphone for people who are attending the meeting remotely? Thank you. The one in the middle.
James Rice from Jump Networks. I was just wondering what switch platform you're using, since that's quite an impressive uptime.
That's a Foundry Net Iron.
Okay.
So it's essentially a big iron. It's got a bit more advanced management interface. Any others?
Nope. Okay. Thank you very much, Remco. And next up is Lynx.
Got a choice. We can either have Acrobat or PowerPoint. Okay. So my name's Mike Hughes. I work at Lynx. I look after the technical side of the operation. So just a little bit of an update on what's going on with us since maybe the last time you saw me or the last EIX. Traffic's still on the up, peak around 38.5 gig. Traffic growth, I'm just going to grab a browser if they're here. Okay. Let me grab a new browser window. Come back. No, there's no badges there. So I'll just grab our current traffic stats. That's what the thing currently looks like. This is the normal sort of live stats. This doesn't include traffic that flows through our private interconnect service. So in the same way as or similar way in that Keith at Exchange Point has private interconnect service running over their DWDN network, we also chose to run private interconnect mostly within a site. To basically bypass the switch platform and offload traffic from the switch platform. And this has obviously been a real help to the big guys when they're wanting to go and do 2.4 gig point-to-point or even just giggy point-to-point interconnects between each other. So there's probably at least another 10 gig on top of this that's sort of going over infrastructure that we own. But as these private interconnects are a dark fiber and they're just patched together, so it's kind of like a meet-me room, like a patch panel, we don't know for sure how much traffic's going over those, but talking to people, I guess there's at least another 10 gig floating around out there. So that's what the traffic looks like. I don't know about the 10% figure that Keith was showing, but we certainly, you know, saw quite a hefty growth, you know, through January, February, March, going up by six gig, maybe more. And then it's kind of topped out again around the April time again. And is that everybody else sort of seeing pretty much the same curve? So, yeah, nice viruses, I think. Good worms. So, yeah, that's what the traffic looks like. And if I get that presentation back again, come back. I broke it. So what we've done, certainly infrastructure-wise, is we're now running Foundry MRP. That's the Metro Ring Protocol that protects our 10 gig ring. Our architecture is basically designed as a 10 gig core ring, has a couple of 1 gig spurs out to some edge switches. But the main network through Docklands is entirely 10 gig. Set up as a ring so we could actually run this protocol rather than, say, 802.1w. And very rapid failover, it's almost undetectable. It's failing over inside of 300 milliseconds during a ring fail. It seems reliable and stable. We've not had any issues with an explained ring wrap. So everything's been traced down to somebody rebooting a switch or a switch crashing or somebody knocking a connector out or something like that. And it complements each switch we're operating on our Extreme platform, so they both have this this ring protection mechanism. It means that it makes life much easier for us when we're going to do plan works and things like that. The Root Fuse guys, the UFO, you may know them as based out of the University of Oregon, they basically are wanting to go and add collect functionality elsewhere around the planet, pick up bricks locally. So they shipped a box to us, and we host that, and it's connected to the exchange, and people can send in a view of their routing table. And that goes into the main data set that they provide to various researchers, and generally good there. And also we're supporting a Team Cymru Bogon route server, so it basically announces all the Bogon routes, and you just get a feed of those. And sometimes it may be easier than maintaining your own prefix lists. We had a Foundry 10 gig card blow up in a really strange way. All the middle, so if you think of a MAC address, you think the middle, if you do it like a Foundry notation, it's three characters, dot, three characters, dot, three characters. So the middle tuple was completely munged. Two edge tuples were fine, but the middle tuple was completely munged, and it's quite an interesting failure mode. And it just appears to be memory. That's gone back for an RMA, and we haven't had a report back from it. And certainly in the Extreme point of view, I'll echo what Keith said. If you aren't running new software, get new software. Prepare for things to die when you get it, though, because things will be rejected by the diagnostics, and things will fail. It'll spot things that are on the way out. And if you do spot anything that's on the way out, replace it. Because there does seem to have been some issues with some of the Extreme hardware. Mostly, in our case, it's been 8-port gig cards. So we're upgrading one of our switch platforms. I selected Foundry for the upgrade on the platform. So the MG8 10 gig switches and jet core upgrades. We've got one MG8 actually installed in the suites at the moment. We introduced it into the core network as a transit switch, and it appeared to be working fine, and then we found out we got some weird issues, so we backed it out, and we're currently working with Foundry what those are, but it appears that we're getting garbage out of some ports, and obviously we're not happy about that and need to get that sorted. It didn't appear to be losing any packets, they appeared to be generated, but I thought, well, that's not good, I don't want unknown unicast flying around this network, so we've taken that out. We're going to push forward with doing jet core on the existing boxes. That'll give us some more benefits in terms of what we're able to do in terms of, say, trunk ports, things like that. And we also changed channel at this point, so we actually moved to a new channel partner, reseller, and they're providing our support as well. Why did we choose Foundry? Well, we evaluated the Cisco stuff, and the, you know, 720 on the 6500, and it's a complete platform, and the feature set's very complete, mainly because they're trying to make it a smooth transition from the existing 6509. The problem that I found during the eval was the current iterations of the platform don't have the required port densities and horsepower. You compare that to the MG8, where you've got 40 ports of Gigi on a line card. That's like a whole switch on a line card, which is great, as long as it's going to work. So that's why we chose Foundry, and also just competitively and support package-wise, they were far more competitive than Cisco. Right now, Lynx is remaining committed to dual vendor and a dual LAN architecture, so we've got the two platforms, Foundry and Extreme. We've already been through one round of research, so we can take the experience from that, but we'll be researching again for upgrading the other platform during our next financial year. And that's basically just to spread the overall cost and how much money's flying out the door at any one time. MD5 uptake, so everybody knows there was this big, run MD5, everybody, things, bad things out there, bad people, TCP resets. So use of MD5 became recommended following this advisory, and basically the head and tail of it in case you were asleep or in a hibernation or in space or something for the last couple of months is that it's been found that it's actually easier to spoof a valid TCP reset and kick a session over. That's scary for stuff like BGP because TCP sessions are long-lived. And therefore, also when you reset the TCP session, not only do you just reset the session and it starts again, you actually pull all those routes out of the routing table as well. So it's really, really bad for your RIB and your general routing stability. People are going around putting MD5 on. If any Lynx members want to do MD5 with their session with the collector, we strongly encourage it. Right now it is optional, but we'd like you to. About 21% of member peers with the Lynx collector on MD5. We haven't been going around actively chasing people to do it yet because we figure you've got bigger fish to fry of your own. What we will do is we will start pushing people to do that and hopefully encourage some best practice along the way. So it's a little bit slow, the uptake, but we provided an exchange tool to allow people to exchange secrets. Normally an MD5 session may take between 4 and 6 emails or a couple of phone calls to get set up. And whereas if you can actually find some fairly safe way of exchanging the generating and exchanging the passwords in an sort of N squared method, then it makes life a little bit easier. So we provided a tool for people to do that. And Hank, Amzix, how's things going
Thanks
there?
Thanks very much, Amzix. Do you have any idea if this has actually been exploited on Lynx connected routers?
As far as I'm aware, it's not been exploited against a Lynx connected router, as far as I'm aware.
Okay.
I am aware there is exploit code out there. It does work.
I just want to ask that. How many people here actually have the exploit code? Because it's on the... how many people... of us two, how many people actually tried this?
Three.
I've tried it. And although you kind of make it work, it's not trivial.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When you start playing with this, you start realizing how much stuff you have to know beforehand before it's, you know, you get down to a time level where it actually makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's the other one is it's like, Dan, if you can milk the stuff out of looking glasses, it then becomes infinitely easier. So if you have an idea of what the which way around the session faces, what the remote, what the high-numbered port is on one end, it becomes easier very quickly, particularly if the window size is high.
Yeah,
Keith,
I mean,
and Steve?
I just wanted to say that we are seeing a similar rate of uptake of this against our collector, about 20%. That disappoints me slightly, not least because a lot of internet exchange collector and similar type routers have top-level name servers behind them. So
yeah,
I would encourage people to get on with this.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, we're certainly letting people go at their own pace now because we realise they may have other issues internal to their own organisation. But I think at some point it's up to people like myself and Keith and some of you guys to encourage some best practice, and we'll start coming knocking on people's doors for it. Steve?
Yeah, I got the exploit code like sort of just before they announced all the hoo-ha, and I think it's quite easy to download. The only thing is that it doesn't really work very well. At least the stuff that I got wasn't written very well, so I tweaked it a bit and then it worked a whole lot better.
Can we have a copy of your code?
I'll send you some packets.
hang on, I'll just phone my knock.
I'm not privy to all of the information that's going on around it, although I have managed to get quite a lot of information before it was released and some stuff that hasn't been released. I'm under the impression that as the thing currently stands, the announcement is covering the general vulnerability. I'm under the impression that there's a bunch more information about how to make this attack a whole load quicker and effective that isn't in the public domain. And I haven't seen this, so it may be a rumour, but it seems like quite a true rumour. So I'm expecting to see some additional information. As it stands, it's not particularly easy, to be honest, to tear anything down. It's fairly difficult, but I think there's some more information that's going to hit, or someone's going to make the code a whole load leaner, and that'll be out there. The other thing as well that I discovered that I wasn't aware of, or maybe everyone else knows this, I just got overwhelmed with the amount of vulnerabilities everyone was releasing recently. So, when you enable MD5, apparently the current BIOSes and stuff that are out there process the MD5 before they actually look at whether this is a valid packet, as in whether it's part of a TCP session. So that actually means that you can take down a... Who cares about taking out a TCP session if you can max out the CPU on a router, which you can just do by flooding it with MD5? Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem to have gotten much press, but that seems like a really bad thing to me. That's worse than kicking out individual sessions. You can take the whole router out, if that makes sense. So in other words, you send it a packet, the router processes the packet, and then once it's actually finished with the packet, it goes, by the way, is this for a current session?
Anyone from Cisco in the house?
And could people please say who they are again for the remote listeners?
Could you think this again? I think the big problem with the MD5 stuff is that we were all rushing to do MD5, and we probably created more problems on the internet by installing MD5 than this recent attack will ever do.
Mm-hmm.
And we did this without having no analysis whatever available what this do. We don't know the performance of most of the routers on decoding MD5. Mm-hmm. There's routers out there who stored MD5 passwords in clear text. And okay, of those of you in here who configured MD5, how many of you sent the passwords in clear text? Anyone? Anyone? All right, okay.
Wolf in sheep's clothing. Who knows?
Is he off to fix everybody else's routers for us?
No, he'll come back here with his underpants on the outside of his jeans. I worry about myself. Yeah, I'm under a lot of stress. Okay, so also we managed to thanks to the NetNode people and testing out some stuff that was on our website, we managed to go and badger Quagga into actually doing MD5 as well. So that involves kernel patches and things, but they work, and we've got it on our route servers now as well. So that seems to work really fine. Marketing stuff. Recently, Telex over in 60 Hertz in New York City, they came and said, well, hey, we'd actually like to sign for the Lynx partner because we've got quite a lot of these Lynx from Anywhere carriers, and if you don't know about Lynx from Anywhere, it's basically just the scheme of connecting people that don't necessarily want to go and do the wonderfully utopian thing of putting a router in the exchange and using a WAN circuit as completely correct and the right way to do it as it is. We recognize that it's expensive and you may be taking a lot of risk and you don't know how much traffic you're going to pass. So there's all these guys out there selling these Ethernet services, so hey, let's use them. So there's a lot of these guys out there. They're selling Neo Martini stuff. They've got stuff in Telex. Telex have got some space, so it seemed like a nice little marriage. So what that means, we can extend our reach out to, I think we have been doing anyway, but we got extended reach out to New York without switch by Telex joining up our partnership program, becoming a partner out there. So hopefully that can bring some more people on from that side. I mean, in most cases, what I've seen from people connecting over Martini carriers, with one exception, people connect over a Martini carrier, start peering, realize, wow, what a lot of traffic we're dropping in London, let's just go and build a pod there. There's one exception where it switched the other way and they actually had a router and a WAN circuit. They congested the WAN circuit, realized, wow, the WAN circuit I need is actually really expensive and I can get a really cheap Martini circuit instead. So actually I'll just back all the pair of giggy Martini circuits halfway around the world. But that was particularly because the economics worked that way for them. Lynx had a stand over at CeBIT in Hanover this year. Bit of an experiment. We gave it a go. Marketing and sales went and just looked after it this time. A lot of hard work for them, but seemed pretty successful. Got quite a lot of good sales leads. And so we're probably going to do it again. And I think it'll probably involve a few more people from various different departments in the company rather than just the sales guys. And also, if you're familiar with Bento, which is a BGP-based traffic analyzer, so it takes a BGP feed from your router and flow stats and can analyze them and munge them. That's available as a service to people who are already members to help them plan their peerings and analyze their traffic if they aren't doing it themselves already. But also we're looking at ways of actually deploying it as a pre-sales tool. So, you know, it's just answering this burning question, how much traffic could I peer should I come here and manage to peer with all these people on my wish list? So we're looking at ways of actually deploying that as a tool to actually encourage people to come and peer in London because it's a good place. And that is it. Thank you very much. Anybody got any more questions? Okay.
Thank you, Mike. Paolo.
Okay, good afternoon. My name is Paolo Moroni. I work for CERN, the European Organization for Nuclear Research based in Geneva, Switzerland. We operate one of the oldest European exchanges in our premises, and more recently with extensions to other, with a cooperation with a colocation provider. A quick update of what situation we have today is we had a more or less stable membership. We had some withdrawals, some new arrivals, but we still see some, in spite of that, we still see growth in the telecom and fiber operators area, because we also operate, well, that's a sort of characteristic of our exchange, we also operate the exchange at the circuit and fiber level, not only at the IP level. The partnership we have with Telehouse Swiss has changed that a little bit. You'll see that a bit later. However, from an operational point of view, there is no change. CERN is on the border between France and Switzerland, whereas Telehouse Swiss is in the center of Geneva, and the two sites are interconnected together with gigabit Ethernet links. We started in the last months with the VLAN services, which have been relatively successful. We have quite a few people who are taking advantage of them, and they are used both for special services, but also for members who want to, instead of peer, they prefer to sell transit, and they can do that on dedicated VLANs. This is about the membership. What has grown recently in the membership is mostly local operators like the Swiss Confederation, which is deploying a network for their own purposes. CRI 74 is a consortium of public institutions in the French department of Haute-Savoie, who have decided to join the exchange in order to get, first of all, to get transit, but also maybe later on to do peerings, and some commercial, traditional commercial operators. We are primarily a research institute. We are doing research projects, and so some of the enhancements we had planned to the service have been delayed a little bit. We had started thinking of a multicast or IPv6 service already a long time ago, but now this stuff is there, so we have a multicast infrastructure. The following point is more related for telecom operators who want to get their SDH or any kind of equipment or WDM equipment installed. We have a brand new power supply for 48 volt DC, and the website has been revamped at last, and that's something that I should have done a long time ago, but it was delayed several times, but at least we managed it. We have split from the CERN external network, so the exchange is really only carrying the exchange traffic. Something which is new, I already mentioned the IPv6 infrastructure, which is available, although for the moment it is not much used, but I hope we'll have some people on board soon. The iRoute Anycast server is operational since 1 or 2 months. And we are setting up an agreement with Akamai for a trial installation, and if it is successful, we'll turn it into a stable service. And the most important enhancement after almost 10 years of life of our exchange is the new logo that didn't exist so far. We always used the CERN logo, and so at last we have a logo. And actually, this, more seriously, this is the most important change which happened recently. We always had a partnership with Telehouse Swiss, which is a local colocation company, which was fully owned by Telehouse Europe until a few weeks ago. And Telehouse Europe has decided to sell this company to IX Europe Switzerland. And for the moment, there is no change in the operation. Everything just continues as it is. We have to, speak to IX Europe. We already started, actually, and see if they want to change anything in the agreement or review the operational procedures. But I don't expect any important change, any visible change from this point of view. What is curious is that IX Europe also happens to be the owner of the TIX, which is the largest IP in Switzerland, which is in Zurich. So, well, I don't know whether that will make any change really in our the way we run the exchange, but we, of course, for respect to the partner, we have to speak to them first and then announce that we have changed or we have no change. And I think that's it. Yes. Is there any question?
When do we get the T-shirts with the new logo? or are some things too much to hope for change?
No, I think distribution of T-shirts was already done for one of our research projects called the Data Tag. And, well, for the exchange, we'll see. I don't know if this so important, actually. Shall I put it in the next development?
Yes, please. Any serious questions, or is that a very serious question?
Okay.
Any other questions for Paolo?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, and next is Amzix and Henk.
Should be it, I guess. Okay. Can you hold? Ah, okay, yeah, that's cool. Ah, okay, not USB. Yes. Okay. Need my glasses. Great. Okay. Or rather, Microsoft Windows and its inability to interoperate.
Is it this one? Yeah? Okay. 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 My name is Henk Steenman from Amsterdam Internet Exchange. First, I'll start out with some trends on how we're doing. Upper left is traffic volume growth over the last year since 1998. The blue dots is monthly amount of traffic shipped on the M6 customer ports. And the orange line is a fitted curve. As you see, until last year, it nicely fitted an exponential growth. Then we had a slowdown during quarter two and quarter three of last year. And then end of quarter three, and until now, we again see an exponential growth of traffic volume. Although in this month, we did see a slowdown in the growth, similar to April last year, and similar as seen by Lynx. The picture on the right shows our growth in ports and connected members. The green dots is the amount of ports connected. The blue dots is the amount of members. The red bars is the amount of DT connections. The yellow bars, the fast Ethernet. And as you can see there, is that this Kiki is growing much faster, and we stabilize on the number of fast internet connections. Bottom is the 24-hour average traffic, the green line, and the pink line or red line is the 5 minutes peak traffic over the last 1 year and a half. General trend here is everything's growing, as with all most other exchanges I've seen. So another one on trends I'd like to show you. It's just look it up and I thought it might be interesting. The left top diagram shows the router vendors connected to the M6. So we have about 240 ports connected. And if you look at all the ports and the brick, the big reddish chunk is Cisco, and the other big light blue chunk is Juniper. And when you look at the right lower diagram, that's only the gigabit Ethernet ports, and then the red one again is Cisco, and the orange light chunk is Juniper. You see that it's almost equal there. So it's a nice statistic. Okay, last quarter we have been mostly busy with migrating the platform. We have a migration of the topology of the platform from a circle infrastructure to a star hub infrastructure. So this is what our infrastructure currently looks like. We have two star hub topologies, two core switches at the top at Science Park and TeleCity, four S switches at the bottom at our four different locations. To each core switch connected in a star structure. Two top switches, core switches, talk TSFP with each other for resilience. Anytime only one of these star hubs, hubs pouch is operational, either the blue or the red one. At the moment it's the red one. When a link fails, the whole thing switches over to the other core switch, and the other star becomes operational. Another thing we introduced was 2x10 gig aggregated connections from switch 4, which is NICEF, and switch 5, which is TeleCity, because that single 10 gig link couldn't handle the load anymore. We did that in only one of the stars, because we didn't trust the technology completely, so we leave it in one star and we can always fall back to the other to run on a single link. As far as so long as capacity can still handle that. The core switches are supposed to become foundry networks, mucho grande switches. At the moment, it's still big iron 15,000 jet core switches. We have still seen some problems with the mucho grande, which seem to be solved in a later software release we have. Better we're still testing, and then we can change these for the MGH. Other big work we've done the last couple of months is migration from all customers to from the old iron core switches to the new jet core switches. That's completed. Okay. There was supposed to be two pictures, one showing the old SALA switch, switch 3. It has, it's very famous.
That's network traffic load, you see.
Could you all do independent presentations next time, please?
Yeah, okay. And the other picture was supposed to show the cabinet with only the cables hanging out there without a switch, but okay. So we've concluded the migration. 95 of the migration went smooth and well, or the most problems we found were in coordinating, and I think 90% of all the problems were in locating the right people to contact to actually coordinate the migration of their port. We found some issues on the new switches. One blade on the Nikkei switch turned out to be faulty. Corrupted one bit on the TCP headers now and then. And some port security issues turned up, and these are all fixed now. That's it. Aggregated gigabit Ethernet connections. Since January, we have implemented 9 gigabit Ethernet connections that are actually aggregated to a 2 gig connection. It is very nicely load balancing. The lower two pictures show one member with traffic between 300 and 400 meg. This is the traffic on each link. It's pretty nice symmetric. We found that Foundry to Juniper works very nice, no problems at all. Foundry to Cisco, we have seen plenty of issues on the Cisco side, as far as we know. Cisco's routers start sourcing MAC frames with a source MAC address of beef, food beef, or for some reason. And we've seen other issues where the Cisco router starts reloading Ethernet microcode ever so often.
We've seen beef, food, beef on links as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, Mike used links. We've seen beef, food, beef stuff come up on links as well. Maybe they're hungry, you know.
Yeah. Well, it actually makes the aggregated connection unworkable. M6 Partner Program. M6 Partner Program is oriented towards carriers or layer 2 providers who wants to offer remote M6 connections, bring them to M6 on a layer 2 path. We have currently 9, 6 in region, which is in the Netherlands, and 3 international. Brought in a couple of customers, and we are talking with a number more on this. A lot of interest, actually. Of course, and processes and tools and documentation all went through the first iteration with these first customers, and we're updating that and making that more workable. M6 general and technical meeting, May 26th. If you remember, you're welcome at the general meeting. If you're a member, of course, you're welcome at the technical meeting. If you're not a member, you're also welcome at the technical meeting. If you're any interest to be there, you're welcome. And then, of course, we exist 10 years in the sense that there is an email with someone dating 1994 mentioning M6 for the first time. It's the oldest email we could find. So we thought that's a good idea for a 10th anniversary birthday party. And you have all an invitation in your right package for the party tonight at Marshall on the Rasta. That's my presentation. Questions?
Okay. Okay, thank you, Hank. And next. Gigabits.
Can I ask a question while they set up, I think?
Yes. Who are you?
I'm still Steve Wilcox, and I'm still working at Telecomplete in the Lakes. At the last meeting, we kind of threw up an idea and said, wouldn't it be great if we had a shell server at M6, and a lot of people agreed and stuff. I just wondered if you took that away and did anything with it, if you're thinking of doing it, or you're not thinking of doing it, or just not thought about it.
Yusuf.
Hello, everybody. I will give you a short update about NICCZ in Prague in a few slides. clicking what on another notebook. So NixEZ at this moment has currently 50 networks connected, 46 are members. We got two new members from January, from last time. You can see the statistics, which is current from the web. So we reached 3 gigabit in total aggregated traffic within last quarter. And yes, seven networks, they operate IPv6 peering on the same VLAN. As for the technical things, we had to solve a problem of reaching 1 gigabit on the fiber lines between our POPs, and we are still postponing the decision about 10 gigabit technology to the future. So we choose the option to use splitters to get two gigabit lines on one fiber line, and yeah, we got it, and we have still some time for the decision for the future. For the other things, we are thinking about hosting any cast mirror of some root name server. We have already experience with any cast service. We implemented the AS112, which is I don't know how many of you know this. Know this project? Can you just show your hands? Who is? Okay, just shortly. This is Anycast mirror of network which provides DNS resolutions for reverse zones for the private networks, and this Anycast mirror can help to prevent unwanted traffic on international lines. So we implemented it, and we are now getting the statistics from this. And I need to mention our traffic analyzer. We reported last time that we are technically ready, but as we get inputs from EuroIX and other parties, that we should take care about the legal status of this thing. So we get a note from lawyers or some message from lawyers that we can do it, we can use the analyzer to analyze the traffic on the common infrastructure, but we have to follow some conditions. So we are allowed to use this for making statistics for the association, for its members, but we are not allowed to go inside the packets and to see which user has sent some information to some different user, and we are not allowed to publish these gaffer data to public. So with these conditions, we implemented the analyzer, we are running it, and we have reports from the tool that we can go to members and say there is some problems, you do not follow the operational rules. We have the document which states what is allowed and what is disallowed on the common segment. As for the technical implementation, we gave a lot of information on EuroIX on the last meeting in Berlin, so if you want more information, look at the presentation from this event. And last slide, what's new in Czech Republic, we joined the European Union on the 1st of May, so we are part of Europe, hopefully, but they still check our passports on the border, so I don't know. And the second, I think, more positive thing, that we got some T-shirts. So at the end, please take your business card and choose XL or XXL. I'm sorry, we have no L at this moment. Maybe next time. Thank you.
Thank you, Josef. Well, I'm glad to see so many people who got the message about T-shirts. So. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Gigapix have said they'd like to do a presentation, but they haven't actually turned up yet. But we do have their slides. They're double booked. They're in IPv6 doing presentation in there. Very nice t-shirts. Curtis wants to have a quick talk about microallocations. No. Idea. Do we want an action point on the NCC to have versions of PowerPoint available that work with QuickTime TIFF images?
I thought you were going to say that you wanted an action point to bring T-shirts, but okay.
Well, I was going to get to that one afterwards.
I asked Fergus for a few minutes of the agenda time because since yesterday, or I think it's 2 days ago, there is on the IETF IDR list, there's an interesting discussion going on that might interest you. There's a document called the RFC 1836, if I remember the number correct from working from a chair over here. That's the route server RFC. It's the closest thing we have to describing how to use route servers. And as a lot of you are either thinking of using route servers at the exchange point or actually using it, or if you're an ISP, you might be using it in your network, it might be worth noting that there is a discussion going on to move this to historic due to the lack of support for implementations of this. A lot of you might consider, so what? The problem is that, as you might know, there's also a rework being done and rewriting of all the specifications around the BGP specification and all the documents around this. And you probably don't want to leave. If you want to have route servers running at exchange points, you probably don't want them to move the only document that mentions this in a standard historic. 1836, though, does describe route service a bit different than in the terms that we're using it in the exchange point. It actually describes how to use this to minimize the full IBGP mesh inside the network. There is some discussion that started last night on that maybe we want to create a new document to describe the way the route servers are actually used at exchange points, or create a BCP for how this is used, but at least document this somewhere if they decide to move this to historic. So I just want to, you know, make you aware of this discussion, and if you're using route servers or interested in this topic, you probably want to join that list. If you go to the IETF webpage, there's the ID, you can click on working groups, and you can, under the routing area, you can find the inter-domain routing working group, IDR, and how to subscribe to this, and check the archives. Also, if there is interest for actually writing a new RFC or BCP on this, it might be interesting for the people to actually use. We don't use this ourselves, so I'm sort of only relaying a message. I'm more or less couldn't care less if you have this or not. So if you're interested in this, it might be worth starting to talk to some other people if you want to document this and write a new document on how this is being used today. And that was all I had to say.
Any questions? No. Okay. I will have a look at the Gigapix presentation and see if I can give it.
It should be on here. No, it's showing not found on the server.
Right. Okay. There's Gigapix. They're a small exchange run by the Academic Web Network in Portugal. They're based at the University in Lisbon. Anybody is free to join. The deal is that you have to peer with the Academic Network, and then it's free. They've now got a second location, but nobody wants to go there. Um, 300 kilometers between the two locations. Nobody seems to be building POPs in Oporto. They're now doing gigabit ports. Cogent, Lambanet are a member. Is anybody from Lambanet here?
tell us any more about them? Okay. And they've got an effort. New cable co joining them. And two members leaving. From what we know about them within EuroIX, they basically have a half-time employee working for them, and it's part of his other responsibilities within the university. 6 out of 20 members doing IPv6, and they got hit by the MD5. So, if anybody's got any questions, I can give you their email address. Okay. Right. Okay, well, any other items people would like? And I'm afraid I forgot the T-shirts. I'm sorry. So, any other things people would like to discuss before we finish? Last thoughts on the NCC action plan? Obviously, more T-shirts, better PowerPoint. Curtis? Do people find the idea of the Jaguar interface useful? Well, do you have people in the office, you know, wanting to listen to the meeting and feedback to the meeting, or if anybody's interested, are they just here anyway? Nope. So is the mood of the meeting that we wouldn't miss it if it wasn't there? If anybody is listening and would like it, please send me email. Okay. Well, thank you all for coming. The first session seemed to be a bit livelier than normal, so we'll try and do some more events like that. Next meeting will be in Manchester at Ripe 49 at the Renaissance Hotel. And, of course, links will have lots of T-shirts seeing us there. Holding the meeting. So, thank you for coming, and see you all in September. Thank you.
look at the street, on the top floor. Oh, no, it's not in the front. I feel they're changing. Dominic says that they don't want to sell hard money.
Met die server, dat ging aardig. Connect the USB. The monitor switch takes power from the USB. Hey, dat is wel kennis. Let's start a rap. Badger.